Hi, this is Sudhish Kamath, the director of Good Night, Good Morning. Thank you for buying an original DVD of this film. The title of this film is borrowed from a piece of dialogue from Billy Wilder's Some Like It Hot. You'll get to see the scene I'm talking about at the end of the opening credits. So this is how the film begins, with a shot of lights at the tunnel, which is also how it ends. This is the most expensive part of our shoot because the first 4 minutes, the opening credits, cost us something like 13 lakh rupees. That's like 30,000 US dollars, which is about 40% of our total budget. And we were crazy enough to shoot in the most difficult period, that's between Christmas and New Year's, because I was very keen that it should be credible. The setting had to be credible for the film to work, because otherwise this is a film I could have shot in my own house, but then who's gonna watch it? The one thing about independent filmmakers is most of us are lazy. We just don't want to go that extra mile, because hey, we are independent filmmakers. But since my script was already low budget, I just didn't feel like cutting corners there. And I couldn't imagine this film without New York, so we had to go there. We hadn't planned to spend this kind of money that we ended up spending on the film, but once you've been to New York, you would definitely fall in love with that place. So that's the first time we see Seema alone in a bar on New Year's Eve 2009, which is when we shot the film there. There is no way you can put a set for something like that. And that's the first time we see Manu and Raja and Abhishek and Vasant, my talented actors who are right now pretending to get drunk. It was the coldest night in New York when we shot this film, and none of us had even seen snow until that day. So it was quite an adventure. More like a horror film, because it started off with a 6-people crew and only 2 of us were left. Only 2 of us survived the night. It was the end of the long day. We had shot a portion of the film in the snow, and then we had to get to Times Square by about 6. 4 actually. We were asked to get there by 4, but we got there only around 8. And that's the New Yorker. The outside is definitely New Yorker, the inside we had to cheat. That's the scene I was talking about, the scene from Some Like It Hot. A few seconds before this shot, Tony Curtis says goodnight and Marilyn says good morning. So yes, that's how we got the title of the film. I was lucky to get Seema Raimani on board. She is just an absolutely wonderful actress. And Manu Narayan is exceptionally talented too, and so is Vasant Santosham, who had very few lines in the film and still had to be a presence. I owe it to my actors for making the film what it is. The black is where our film really begins, with the phone call.
So you're not a hooker. You're not a
chicken. That's really the beginning of our story, because even if you miss the opening credits, you don't miss anything.
You might have been 5 drinks down.
So here we are with Manu drunk dialing this girl. We really don't know how they met, but that's part of the mystery.
What does that tell me?
Some reason
I don't know,
for us to stay and find out. Every hero's journey begins with the refusal of the call. Our heroine's journey is no different. She refuses the call.
Thanks, dudes.
Literally, the phone call, which is the basis of this entire film. I really don't know how many people actually knew that they were walking into the cinema hall to watch a film which was just one phone call. The entire film was just going to be one phone call, and I had no idea how people would react to something like that. Honestly, I wouldn't watch a film like that, so for me the challenge was to write a film that even someone with a really short attention span, someone like me, would watch. And the key to that, we figured, would be the mystery. We had to keep an element of mystery and suspense about our characters, not reveal everything about them, and make people stay and find out more about them. So who is this girl? what visions is she having? Was it just a bad dream? And how did the guys get her number? Obviously, something happened that night because of which he got her number. The human mind works in mysterious ways and we want answers. As they say, curiosity killed the cat. What happens if you get a call and you don't take it? Haven't you always wondered who was the blank caller and wondered what if you'd given it a chance? That's possibly what led this mysterious girl in the hotel to maybe call this guy back.
But I had a little bit to drink and then JC introduced me to the prettiest girl I've seen.
The road not taken. So what happens when you do that one thing which you haven't done all your life? So this was the toughest part of the script to write on the awkward silence, the awkward conversation between two strangers. What would they talk? What would they say right at the beginning of the phone call?
Oh, yeah.
Something that had to break the ice between two strangers.
Which one of the two
are you?
And also drop hints that they've possibly met before, which is what we were doing with those inserts. A hint to the viewer that these people have met before, however briefly. And it's also flashes of memory for the girl, because she has a vague memory of the guys she's speaking to, which makes it that much more plausible for a viewer to buy the story of two strangers talking to each other. We shot this with reverse projection, the way it was shot on the talkies of the 50s as a homage to that era. Also because it's almost impossible to shoot on a highway for logistical reasons, of course. Also, anyone who stayed in a hotel in New York would know how small and claustrophobic the rooms are. Which is okay to stay, but when you have to shoot, we also need to figure out the space for the fourth wall, the camera, and the lights, which made it impossible for us to actually shoot it in a room.
What do you mean hot?
Which is why we had to cheat and shoot. Luckily for us, we found a hotel just like that, closer home, the pod. The hotel room plays an important character by itself. The room needed to have some character, so we went looking out for different kinds of rooms. We liked this one because of the partition there, which was a perfect setting for the kiss to happen. The kiss to happen over a split screen, that is. Visually, we found that very exciting. Again, more flashes of memory. This is possibly flashes of his memory. The initial plan was to keep the whole film a split screen. In fact, the first cut of 105 minutes did not have any full screen shots. The whole film was split screen. The idea behind that was that at any point the audience should know everything about the characters. Every single thing they did that night. Every single thing they told each other. Every single thing they did not tell each other. The idea was to make them play God or a warrior, depends on how you look at it. But the idea was also to be honest to the audience and tell everything about the story that they needed to know and more. What if you knew every bit of a relationship, every single thing two people in an intimate relationship told each other? And I wanted these two strangers to go through that relationship and put the audience in a place where they knew absolutely everything about these two people. And no, it wasn't autobiographical. It's not based on any phone call or any single phone call that I had in my life. This is entirely fictional. We had to make sure there was some distance between us, the writers, me and Shilpa Ratnam, and the characters, Turiya and Moira, simply for the reason that if we were going to make them as us or as mirror versions of us, then we would get so indulgent that we wouldn't know when to ask them to stop. So we put some distance between us and the characters so that we knew we could ask them to shut up when they were talking absolute rubbish. And the characters inside the car are manifestations of the audience reaction. That's one way to look at it, because they are objective. They are listening to the phone call just like we are when we are watching the movie. But they also have the advantage of being inside the car and influencing the course of the conversation. That's also part of the criticism that we've got. A lot of critics wondered why we needed these support characters because they don't influence the film in any way. But they are the conflict. If not for these people, this story would not have happened. It would have just been a boring phone call. There would have been no excitement, no energy, no nothing inappropriate said. It would be the most boring phone call, and not to say the most convenient way for the story to unfold. But like we say later in the film, the story has happened because of the conflict, not in spite of it. We like the adventure. I think love stories happen because of the adventure, because of the forbidden. If you ask any guy on which is the last place he would have an intimate phone call, he would tell you. With his friends. With his friends in the car, there's no way he would have an intimate phone conversation.
Yeah, it's the absolute truth.
You know how guys behave. Exhibit A.
In what language?
Now, Turiya is an unusual name, and it provides a little bit of a clue about the subtext of the film, on what we try to do with the larger philosophy of the film. We want to make it exciting for people to find out newer meanings on repeat viewings. That there in the car is four ways to go through life. Either like Hussein, who knows where he's going, what he's doing, who has a plan for everything, or like JC, completely spaced out in another zone. That's the dreamers, like most of us. Then there are guys, the sleepers, who have absolutely no idea of what's going on, and they're comfortable living life being completely unaware. They don't want answers, they're just happy. And the fourth state of consciousness is obviously our character, Turiya. The film is essentially about truth and exploring the truth. And the only truth is that there is no truth. Or at least that there is no one truth. So if you're in the car as Hussein, then you know that what Turiya is doing is not rational. If you're in the car as JC, then you're egging him on. You're making him live the dream. And if you're like the guy sleeping in the car, then you anyway don't care. We're so happy that not too many people have related to the guy who's sleeping in the car and said that, you know, I related to the guy who's sleeping throughout the whole film. I had a similar experience. I'm still surprised how many critics missed that line.
Is this a telephonic orgy?
So obviously, with playing warrior or god, we have this position where we can actually show her changing if we wanted to. But then we thought that's just taking the attention from the conversation, and it's much more powerful in your imagination. We wanted to put you in his shoes and actually imagine her changing, which is why we had to make her go a little off frame, out of frame, to actually change into something different. You know, talk of sex and nudity always breaks the ice, and that's what happens in this case too. Here, it gives her the opportunity to actually be the more dominant figure in the relationship that's just blooming right now. It also offers us clues on who these people really are. So we kind of sense that Turiya is this little shy, innocent, pure boy, whereas Moira is the more experienced among the both of them. And she's clearly enjoying this equation where she plays the more dominant figure. Visually, we wanted to make sure that the picture represents what's going on in the story. So, in the beginning of the film, they're both looking outside the frame. And we see Hussein being a major presence in the film. But as the film progresses, the film becomes more and more intimate, and the characters change positions. Turiya goes to the back seat, gets his time alone, and it's also has a lot to do with the time the film is set in.
Get something for me.
Now this conversation is happening sometime way past 3 a.m. So you know the energy levels in the car are dropping. So no matter how boisterous they are at the beginning of the phone call, at some point they would give up and let him have his moment of you know privacy phone call, because they understand that's what friends do, right? They let you have that call when they know that you're really into the girl, which is what these guys do later in the film. But what also happens is that it provides us the opportunity to make the characters face each other, go for close-ups, and so that was part of the larger visual design of the film, the storyboarding. We had the whole film storyboarded. We knew exactly which position, what degree the characters would be facing when they're saying a particular line, and who else would be in frame when that line is being said. Manu had these other actors in the car to play off him, but Seema, she was alone in the room, so we had to give her a lot of business. The challenges for Manu were very different because he couldn't move his body. The whole of the camera was going to be on him, on his face, and there's very little he could do sitting in a car. It's very cramped, very claustrophobic for an actor to perform, and it's amazing how he pulled it off. The challenges for Seema were very different. She had to make use of the space because she didn't have other actors in the room with her. And the way we shot it was that Manu was actually on the phone with her when we were shooting this, rehearsing. So for him it was a rehearsal, for her it was a shoot. So we shot all her scenes in 3 days. Then what we did was we went back and edited those portions, and then we fed it back to Manu in the car. And he had to react. He had to remember how exactly he had said the line and redo it all over again. So it was quite a challenge for him to do it. I remember he freaked out in the beginning on saying that I'm not a machine, there's no way I can do that. But it's amazing how he delivered it. And you might find it hard to believe that the entire, this side, Manu's side of the firm, was shot in 2 days. So what happens when strangers talk on the phone? What do they talk about? They don't know anything about each other. So the best they could talk about is what they like, what film they like, or what they like to eat, drink, watch, hear. In terms of music, when we wrote this script, we wanted to make sure it was structureless, it was free flowing. As part of our script research, I made six total strangers, six pairs of strangers, talk to each other.
Seriously.
Throughout the night and record 1 hour of that phone conversation and mail it to me. So I had six of my friends do this, and what was interesting was that though I knew what they would talk about, what was interesting for me was the outcomes of these six experiments, the social experiments.
You didn't tell me your name.
And it didn't come as a surprise what they spoke about, because it was all about pop culture, what you like, what I like, and you know, TV shows, films, stuff like that. Which also gives us the opportunity here to pay homage to Before Sunrise, because this film would not have happened if not for that film.
No, wait, just hear me out.
The success and cult following of Before Sunrise, Before Sunset films gave us the confidence that conversation films will find an audience even today. And the idea was to design it like a talkie, like a 1950s talkie. Because we did not have Vienna or Paris, so we had to rely purely on the conversation. The city wasn't going to play a character in this film. The city was just an excuse for us to get into the firm. And once we get into the firm, it had to be just about the conversation. This is a more internal journey of the characters than the physical journey together. This is more cerebral, where that was more sexual, I would say.
Yeah, I know. Jerry Maguire.
Again, this is where the distance helped. The guy is really into movies, and he's talking very passionately about his films. And we wanted the girl to play the perfect foil, and you know, be the voice of reason, and not take him too seriously, because then it would just be one long fanboy fantasy being played out, where I just keep paying homage to all the films I like. So we had to make Moira, the more saner one, who's not as into films as Turiya is, and who has a more simpler approach to films and stories, that, you know, stories need to be simple. That's true, isn't it? Most of us consume films as stories and not just as experiences.
Explain the Matrix to me in
and that also gives us the excuse to get into the next stage of romance, which is the reality check, the differences. So we wanted the differences to creep in very slowly and smoothly. The first 20 minutes, 25 minutes of the film just sets it up for the differences to seep in very slowly, very smoothly. And differences begin with the disagreements on pop culture. And slowly, that leads to disagreements on their takes on life and relationships, or you know, even larger issues on what is God, what is truth, and things like that. So the first 20 minutes, I think, was the most difficult part of the film for us to write, because they were not revealing anything, or at least not anything that was personal about each other.
The Matrix is not
so
just
right now, we're just discussing things which all of us would have strong opinions about, pop culture. This is a classic case of Matrix. I'm pretty sure many of you would react just the same way she would about what the hell was Matrix all about. So at some level, it also provides us the balance. But the idea here was essentially to bring out the differences in their character. But for us, it was another excuse to get into the third stage of romance, which is the reality check.
You know, even
this is the stage when we start noticing the differences after a great honeymoon period.
Some loves
now suddenly we see the cracks. We see where we don't see eye to eye. And that's precisely what Priya is talking about right now. He's talking about love stories becoming great love stories
because
of the conflict. As any screenwriter would tell you, without a conflict, there is no script. Most scripts are written on the basis of strong conflict. And I think that reveals a lot about who we are as a human race. I think we like conflict. I think we like we like to create conflicts and we like getting over the conflicts. I think it gives us a sense of accomplishment. Now, this is the portion of the film that I absolutely hate the way I shot it. I think it was a bad call to shoot it like a sitcom when you didn't have the resources to shoot it like a sitcom. But the thinking at the time of scripting was that most love stories start out as fun, you know, like a sitcom. This did not make it to the festival cut, but we retained this for the theatrical audiences because when people pay money for a ticket, they expect to be entertained. And this was one of the crowd-pleasing, entertaining aspects of the film because of the number of laughs it provides. It's also a light-hearted commentary of the world we live in with social networks and Google and Wikipedia. Anything you want to know is just a click away. You know, that changes the dynamics of romance and relationships so much. And we haven't really seen these aspects being touched upon in our cinema, at least not in India. So this was a good excuse for us to dwell upon the changing aspects of romance, where the geek has suddenly become the guy who can get the girl. How does he do it? Thanks to Google and Wikipedia.
Yeah, like that.
I love that.
Again, I'm really lucky to have Seema and Manu. They're just fantastic in all these episodes. They found it exciting to be somebody else and not the character they were playing. So here we see Manu showing off his goofy side. He actually had a blast playing the geek. And Seema was absolutely loving having some makeup on now because she doesn't wear makeup for most part of the film.
Not funny.
The more I saw this footage, I hated myself for shooting it the way I shot it. So I thought I should put some distance between me and what was going on here. So I decided to give it a TV sitcom feel and make it look like I had nothing to do with the shooting of this one. This is just some really sad sitcom that's probably playing on TV. The more I see this, the more I cringe. But yeah, this is only half of what we shot that made the cut. The other half we obviously deleted because one, bad production values, two, it was already too long and it was too much of a speed breaker in the pace that was affecting the pace of this film. So if you want to see what happens after she opens this door, go to the deleted scene and you can see what happened when Geeky met Sassy.
Guys often pretend to be who they're not.
But what this story provided me was the license to break through time. So it helped me tell a story which is not just about a 1 hour long phone call, but a phone call that lasted all night because they told each other stories that probably went on for a while. We don't know how long these stories lasted. Because all conversations require a little time before people start discussing more the more meaningful and the more deeper
knows.
Aspects
I mean, what if
about
God
their approach to life and their philosophy and
along?
You know larger issues like religion. So
I
obviously
God
I had to give these characters a little time
to know,
for them
to
be,
to
get comfortable with each
I
other to discuss these
time.
Things. So she's obviously drunk, so she has nothing
like
better to do
ago, but
than to
full
listen
truth
to him.
Is
and
there's no
for
full
him,
truth.
He's got
everything
an audience. He's got this
girl
with whom
exactly.
he can share how smart he is or how much how much he's figured out life.
You know, when I was a little girl.
Again, we constantly bring back reminders that it's New Year's Eve and you know the multitasking world that we live in. And I think the randomness of the phone conversation plays an important role in making it realistic, because it would just be too convenient if she's entertaining every single thing he said. So this is a portion where we show her trying to change topic because he's getting creative, serious, and
brave for her.
And I'm sure every conversation goes through these dry spells, the boring parts which you, where you don't know what's going on.
You
know, the awkwardness.
Transfer credit from the God account to the science account.
Especially
so
if you're strangers. The awkwardness between two strangers. You don't know this person all that well, and you're wondering,
oh my God, it's about these
okay,
geeks
this
who
person
the
just talked to me
long
about
waitress
God.
Who works at a cheesecake factory.
But
yeah.
then, I guess Moira is in a space where
well,
she's
yeah, you
know,
we
got a little comfortable with Turiya. She's also
life
drunk, and this is one of those rare moments she actually opens up. But not for too long. The battle of sexes is an important aspect of every conversation, especially between two strangers. Guy and a girl talk, obviously, it's a matter of time before they start talking about, you know, how men are smart, women are dumb. When people ask me why I make this film in an Indian language, in Hindi or Tamil, the answer is simple, because I am most comfortable in English. And like Turiya says, why are we talking about our differences? We are all the same race. We are born with the same raw material. Also, I found a considerable amount of difference in sensibility that our cinema required and the kind of sensibility that this script required. I think that difference is best illustrated in the episode that's coming up now, the way love stories are treated in Bollywood. Most of it, most of our stories are about denial of love, where the guy probably does not even realize that the girl loved him all this while, despite the most obvious clues. I think Manu and Seema are just fantastic in this sequence. That is not just intended as a spoof, but it's also intended to show the disconnect between what's happening in our cinema and the language that we speak today. We don't relate to this. We have recreated the scene exactly the way it was shot in Kuchh. We have not exaggerated anything. It's the same dialogue, it's the same music. We've even used exactly the same soundtrack that was used in Kuchh. We've used the exact same shots that was used in Kuchh. So if you see a spoof here, it's not because we have treated it like a spoof. It's because in your mind, Bollywood is sort of spoofing what's happening in your life. I think Seema really cracked this as Kajal. The biggest compliment for Seema was when Karan Johar reviewed the film and he noted how Seema even betters herself when she's playing Anjali from Kuch Kuch Hota Hai in this sequence. She's got this scene bang on, up to the dialogue, up to the intonation, just the way Kajal did it in Kuch Kuch Hota Hai.
Come here.
The difficult part for us, however, was to find costumes of that era, or at least get the right colors, get the right style of the costumes that were used in that film. That was pretty much the only difficult part of shooting the scene, especially with these wonderful actors. And creating the rain. Well, that was an interesting experience, because as a low-budget filmmaker, what do you do to create rains? You don't have access to things like that. So I was actually holding one of the sprinklers for that rain scene. I think you'll find that in blooper reel, where there's this shot of me demonstrating to Manu how he's supposed to run like Shah Rukh Khan. And this was a tricky part for Seema because she had to speak like Anjali, but in English. And it's just amazing how she does this. This is a long piece of dialogue and she does it with just the right emotion. It's just, she's just brilliant. This is my favorite scene in the film, which we had removed for the festival cut, but we brought it back by public demand. And as you can see at the end of the episode, suddenly the positions have changed. They were looking outside the frame, now they're looking more at us. This is where the film gets into its second act, where we start bringing out the conflict, which
I'm sure you want.
We dropped many hints throughout. This is the gateway into their minds, because till now they were talking about general stuff, and now suddenly they're talking about things that they feel strongly and deeply about, especially things which reveal who they are, things that reveal the kind of baggage they probably carry, the experiences that they've possibly had in life before this phone call. Why do you need romance, she asks, and that's essentially the conflict of the film, for any love story. Why do you need love? The dialogue till this point was short and snappy, and now suddenly both these actors have to launch into long stretches of dialogue because they're talking about things that they feel very, very strongly about.
They may welcome you, they may want to have coffee with you, they may invite you in for dinner, they even
and also offer clues about the baggage that they seem to be carrying from their past lives or the life before.
But seriously,
this
you don't
phone call.
Believe that there's a love.
Again, we use the visual drama that we used before.
No.
This quick inserts of shots.
I used to
from
think
the past.
The love of my life was a guy.
Assure the audience that you will
that
be
Prince Charming
telling
only belongs
a lot
fairy
more
tales.
About it. Yeah, just stay patient, and we'll get to that a little later. That's our way of saying it. Because we don't want to interrupt the conversation that they're having. But as a filmmaker, you have to assure the audience that the answers are coming. It's just a matter of time. On hindsight, I'm glad I wasn't too fixated on maintaining a split screen throughout the film, because I think the actors need to be given individual attention, especially when they're pouring their hearts out. The first cut of this film was 105 minutes of a phone conversation, which was entirely split screen. But the more we looked at it, the more convinced we were that at certain points it was necessary for us
to
pay individual attention. We couldn't afford the audience getting distracted by the antics of the other passengers in the car. So at some points it was necessary for us to keep the focus on Seema. At some points it was important for us to keep the focus on Manu, which is how it becomes a more intimate film rather than keeping it split screen throughout. What also happens if we maintain the split screen throughout is that sometimes you just pay attention to only Seema and you miss out on everything that Manu's been doing. So it was a tightrope walk for us to decide what we wanted to keep as a split screen and what we wanted to keep as a full screen. And this being one of the most intimate parts of the film where they actually are revealing who they are or who they used to be.
I love you, blah, 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 long story, we'll talk about it later.
The other thing about talking to a stranger is you sometimes don't know when you're stepping on each other's toes.
How would you like it if she did that to you?
I would have loved it.
No. You have to actually imagine switching places. If you were her and she was you,
power play that's going on here.
Would that feel right? I don't
Moira has taken on the liberty to
play
Agni Aunt and
people
have constantly been advising him
equal
on what he should be doing,
effort.
Almost like talking down at him.
Easy,
so it was just a matter of time
effort.
Before Turiya reacted to it and strongly, a gentle reminder that they were strangers.
Both
and
people
that
have to have equal intentions
for
each other, and they have to meet halfway.
Halfway.
The fact that he's changing topic is a hint to us that maybe what she's saying is not going down really well with him. It's just a matter of time.
So
for,
in that case, if you and I had a long
distance, he's enjoying
thing,
this conversation.
You would be the kind of guy who would travel 50 miles every day to see me. And if I were the love of your life, I'd be like, oh my God, why is he doing that? Please don't
life.
Do that. I can't get myself.
But obviously, it's just
right?
a matter of time before
yourself,
he was going to take offense to her patronizing him.
Well, what about you?
the male ego comes to play, and obviously it was just a matter of time before he snapped back at her in his own little way.
We can meet each other 100 miles every other week.
Long distance success stories are a work of fiction, my boy.
That's what's happening at this point.
Pessimist, you're the pessimist. I'm the optimist. I mean, there's so much love in the world. Why would you want to hold back for somebody who's away?
Slowly.
No. No, and people come and go, and you know, we're all meant to be companions for a little while or a longer while.
Good work.
And most of the dialogue here is fairly expositional.
Long distance relationships don't work.
It reveals what they believe.
I don't know what.
So for the first time, we see Thuria losing his cool in the course of this phone call.
You up or something,
sort
not
of snaps at
make
her,
you fall in love with me
sort
over
of
the
reminding
phone.
Her that they are strangers.
No, I don't even know your name.
Way of
does it
putting
look like
her
I want to?
Place.
Does it look like
we
I'm
can
interested?
Obviously see what she's not saying.
You're not.
Something
no,
which he
I mean,
cannot
you
see.
Brought up this
he has no idea that
long distance relationship sort of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is
I mean, it
reacting
was
strongly to whatever
I was
he's just
trying
said.
To explain how
he has no clue. Does he?
Require equal
he has
effort
no clue that she could just hang up on
but
him.
I don't even
any
believe in relationships. Forget long distance. And that's really what I was trying
just
to say,
what's happening right
which
now.
Has nothing to do with you.
And soon there's that
no
awkward
that
silence
halfway,
where he does not know what to say. He knows that
like
maybe he kind of overreacted.
We're at
and
a lookout
for her, it's sinking in the fact that the conversation is not
Lucas must be the
pleasant
man.
Anymore. It's not flirtatious anymore.
Star Wars.
It was getting serious.
Episode 4, A New Hope.
So maybe it was time for her to, you know, just hang
so
up.
What you just basically
this.
Said was that
she
I'm not interested enough for you to want to know my
having
a
conversation
right?
when
no,
some guy she barely
I
knew
said. I mean,
was slapping at her.
So obviously, I have a lot of baggage
rejecting
that I can't
her,
put
even
down. And you
he knew who she was.
About how I'm going to get a good night's sleep and make that flight in the morning.
I also right. like the way this shot's
sure,
being
I mean,
composed
you
by our cinematographer, Nishchal Krishna.
What are you talking about? I'm not rejecting
what,
you.
What he decided to do is, since we are shooting it
and
inside a studio,
huh?
instead of moving the car, he would just move the camera. It
Hello?
Was simpler for him to
you know
do
what?
That. And I think it did
to
make it look like the car was really moving.
Was it something I said?
No. No, I don't even know.
So yeah, the cinematographer was literally shaking the camera throughout the
really
shoot for 2 days. The only way he was shooting it was by shaking
what's the point?
It, constantly
the
shaking
one reason.
It. And it couldn't be a huge shake. It had to be a very subtle shake so that it does not distract the audience into wondering what the hell is going on with the camera moving. So I think the beauty of it is not many people realize that it was the camera that was moving and not the car.
And have a lot of
and one of the
luggage,
things I would change
so
if
to
I were to redo
early.
It is the way we lit
okay,
this particular
Facebook?
Shot. I think
no,
the light
is
a little too
name.
Harsh at this point.
I don't know
and
your email.
There's not enough
How
light on his face.
You?
But we just reasoned that not having the ideal lighting just made it
true
that much
lies
more
in the pursuit,
realistic
anyways,
within
the right?
car. Because what is the source of light in a car? There's
must be
at best car light, which is located at the top, which is enough to light
goodbye.
Your forehead, but
no,
not your eyes.
Hello?
And there she
goodbye.
Is, all set to
Hello?
Hang up on him. And obviously,
Hello?
There's no way he's going to admit
bad
to
connection.
His friends that she just hung up on him. Bad connection.
Meat time.
Me too. Let's go feed those fish.
In Indian films, we have this concept of interval. So that was the interval point. The point where people could break for intermission. Go to the bathroom. But what happened was that once we had done with the film, we just didn't feel like this required an intermission. But the reality in India is very different. To sell popcorn, they do break for a recess, and there was no way we could convince them not to have an intermission. So though we had requested for an uninterrupted screening, most cinema halls ended up breaking for intermission at random places because we hadn't put a title card insert which said intermission like most Indian films do. The length of this film is just 81 minutes, so we didn't feel that we needed to break for an intermission by the time we were done editing this film. We have to thank Gregory Jenneret who's a jazz musician, a jazz singer from Harlem, who's given us this song. We also need to thank Ray Guntrip for the first song, the song that played during the opening credits. I don't know how I forgot to thank him when that was going on. So Ray Guntrip gave us Out of the Blue. Gregory Jenry has given us this song, Moon Dance, and he's also given us Once You've Been in Love, the song that plays later in the film during the climax. Manu is a musician himself. He's part of this band called Darunam. So Manu gave us one of the songs he already had called All That's Beautiful Must Die, which is used for his backstory, the rock song. And he also composed a special song for this, something that you will listen to in the climax portion of this. So this is the second half of the film where characters have changed their positions, which is bound to happen in on a road trip. You know, you suddenly feel like you need more space to yourself, especially when you're talking on the phone and you go to the backseat. Now, she's wearing a bathrobe here, but the way we wrote it, we were supposed to shoot it in the bathtub.
Guess what?
To show that she is really naked, not just physically, but also emotionally revealing herself to a complete stranger. But we were not entirely happy with the bathtub frame that we were getting. And also the fact that we would have to spend considerable amount of time with waterproof makeup and or face the risk of having
a
shot which is not too aesthetically done, especially with nudity. Now, obviously, Seema has done nudity before. She was not going to have a problem with nudity, but we thought this film did not require nudity. This was not about the physical nakedness. It was about the emotional nakedness. So the line, we retain the line where she says she's not wearing any clothes, but what metaphorically means is that she is naked, emotionally naked at this point.
So when you saw me
so
the
finally,
bar,
we
you
find out
chick,
who
thinking,
she
oh,
is.
A potential client.
We find out
kind of
her name
going to
for
the
first time.
Risk.
And we find out who he is, because we had no idea what he was doing.
Maybe I saved
because
your life. You owe me one.
Finally, we know he's an insurance agent.
These
are not. These are people with just regular, boring
really
lives. Who've just become somebody else because of the limited validity of this adventure.
And you know.
This online phone call with a complete stranger.
I was so
but since you guys have already seen the film, maybe I should talk
I
a little bit more about how we got the actors in place, especially
so
Raja and Vasant. Raja has been a friend, as a fellow critic, and he was one of the first few people to have read the scripts. And once he read the script, the first thing he told me is, let me play JC. I'm like, what? You want to play JC? How's the script? He said the script is great and don't just waste it using freshers. Let's get two mainstream Bollywood actors to do this film. And he said, but I'm going to play JC. I'm like, dude, let's audition you first. And he was more than game to audition. And I spent nearly an hour ragging him, making him sing and dance because an early draft of the script required JC to do a dance when he's feeding the fish. He does this. He does it like a rock star at a concert, the feeding the fish dance. But the more we got into the shoot, we realized that that was just sticking out like a sore thumb. We just wanted to keep the focus on the two central characters, so we actually ended up removing that scene from the film. Vasant is another actor we had auditioned initially. We were looking for a black American guy to play the role. But once we met Vasant, we were convinced that we didn't need a black American. An Indian guy would just be fine in that role because we were looking at a certain kind of physicality, a certain amount of confidence for that character, which Vasant conveyed. He had to be a strong presence in the film. Even if he didn't have too much of dialogues, and Vasant was just fantastic in his audition. In fact, he was one of the first few people we auditioned. Once we took a look at what he did, we knew we had found our Hussein. And this is us getting into her story. The challenge for this story was to tell the story without using dialogue, because the whole film is conversational. The first episode was sitcom-ish, very American in its sensibility. The second was very Bollywood in its sensibility with its sense of drama. So we wanted to keep this one understated. We wanted to just play with colors. We wanted to play with just blacks and whites. White being standing for the pure virginal girl, romantic, who believed in love, who believed in, you know, heart-shaped rings, who believed in commitment. And she, her life had to get dark. From the cheerful, bright, white life, it had to get dark. And that's, you'll see the transition in the course of the story, with all whites, you know, curtains, white clothes, white costumes, white bed sheets, blankets, everything was in white. And slowly, as the conflict sets in, which is, we suggest that she was pregnant at this point, we see the blacks setting in. We shot this in a New York subway, and this is the hint that she's just back from a hospital. She's depressed, she's upset for a reason. Again, we don't want to say what it is, but we show the pain that she's going through, the physical pain and not just the emotional pain. We didn't want the guy to be the complete bastard. Usually, it's such a cliche for a guy to get a girl knocked up and then disappear. We didn't want that to happen. So we wanted him to be there for her, but we also wanted her not to want him because he did not want the baby. So the conflict was that, not the fact that he was not there, but the fact that he did not want the baby. And you can see that the blacks have now taken over her, and we go completely into the silhouettes for the scene. And I don't know, so a few people do find the fact that we used an omelette here kind of cheesy, but I needed something to remind her of the life that she just destroyed. Something that would make her not want to live anymore. She's trying to get the ring off her fingers, and it wouldn't just come off. You know, it's just stuck. She's stuck with this. She's stuck in a very frustrated point in her life. The only way she sees out is cold-blooded suicide. It's a well-thought-out, well-calculated suicide. It's not something she's done on impulse. She's thought about it. She's left everything that belongs to her, watches, jewelry at home. She's just taken what she needs and come out to kill herself. And there it is, the black, completely taking over.
Survived to live another life.
Then she reveals she survived to live another life.
The girl I was talking about was the love of my life.
Now, this is too strong a confession. One does not know how to react when somebody tells you that they just tried to kill themselves.
You know?
So, obviously, Turiya had to share as well. He had to share where he was coming from. And we get into one of the most emotional parts of the film. How do you know who is the love of your life?
At least not with that much.
And there's an interesting story about how this came about.
I mean,
we must set on record here that this line was written by Deepa Aswani on my blog as a comment to a post which I had written about the last phone call I had with the girl who I thought was the love of my life. That comment she left really had an impact on me. It helped me quite a lot in letting go. And I think letting go is one of the more dominant themes of this film, or what it's trying to tell us. The need to let go. The fact that there is a morning after every night. We live in a world full of dysfunctional relationships, not just the one with a lot of divorces, but also where there's a lot of tension between
matures after a few years and pays you your dividends.
Supposed to be in love.
You still haven't told me what you
Most
do.
Of us today are products of broken relationships.
Legal consultant.
Today it would be a miracle if you actually ended up with the first guy or girl you ever fell in love with.
I just completed my thesis in Chicago and waiting
like
to get
the film
my
says,
PhD.
We are our companions anyway for a while or a longer while.
No, not yet. No, not
we're looking
least,
at,
until the panel makes sense of my dissertation on new media and its impact on shaping personalities
one
and influencing human relationships.
A complete believer and one from a complete cynic in the course of this film.
Well, it's just about how new media technology
says,
basically
no,
has made our
like
lives about instant
faith.
Fixes. Control C, control V, control X,
Moira,
control
somebody
alt, delete. We
once used to believe in
on
love
principles,
and has now realized
failure,
that there is
reboot.
No such thing
and also,
as
technology
a perfect match.
For us to
so she has
your
also considerable experience
boundaries.
In letting go and she's able to rationalize the whole process
across nations,
and
across
also
cultures, across,
look at it
religions and cultures.
From the point of view of technology and the impact of technology in our lives.
Yeah,
most of us
sort of.
Hold on to our memories
now just imagine
because the mobile phones become an extension of our mind space. So she actually applies that theory to life and she tells him to empty his inbox. And I think that holds good for a lot of us. Most of us still keep those messages that which we want to hold on to. We don't want to delete them because they remind us of good times or times we once shared with people we love.
Relationships take time.
Sometimes the most difficult thing is to let go. And I wanted to make a film which will make the letting go process a lot more simpler for those who want to let go. So this is one of those films which a friend described as a warm hug on a winter night. I'm glad she said that because we didn't have that much of clarity when we made this film until she pointed out what it had achieved. And I think that's the best compliment we've ever got after making this film.
How long has it been?
The other thing we've been compared to a lot by many critics
since you guys broke up.
Is that
Three
this
years.
Reminds them of a Woody Allen film, which is surprising for us
you
because
have had
we
a baby
didn't
by
intend
now.
Any
don't
of that.
Say that.
And we honestly don't
God,
think it has
so
anything
baggage.
Common to Woody
baggage.
Allen films.
No, you have to let it go.
Simply because Woody Allen films are all about how love fades,
okay.
And here we are saying exactly the opposite. This,
your SMS inbox
we believe,
your mind
has a lot more to
it
do
has
with
every bit of memory
Cameron Crowe's school of thought.
Messages,
the fact
you
that
have to enter your inbox
anything could change your life,
for new memories.
A moment could change your life, a phone call could change.
Can't just let it go.
You just need
well,
to believe.
Stuff.
You just need
all
to
I'm
believe that things will get all right and
give
things will
funeral.
Get. It's but a more optimistic tone that
come alive and stay alive and
has been inspiring for me in the worst days of my life and. I think that's the kind of film I try to make. That's the kind of film I set out to make. I really love the way Seema delivers
the
lines here. In fact, after she read the script, she would call me every single day and read out lines the way she wanted to read them out. So this is something she read out with an Irish accent. She said, I think the film's getting a little too preachy, so let me play around with the delivery of every bit of dialogue that sounds preachy. So she chose the Irish accent for this one, and I think it just works like a charm. What I like best is how she finishes this up with a completely different change of tone here at this point.
So
this is why she's
one
of the best
stars.
Actresses around in this country.
Well, it was.
And Manu,
so
you're one of the best actors around in that country.
From here on,
the
I'm
US
remember New Year's Eve as this.
I think Manu brings the right amount of vulnerability to this role.
Seriously,
and
I mean, aren't you going to remember?
It's amazing what he's done.
As this night
with
when you got a
the camera just focusing on his face, nothing else, not even no space to walk
I mean,
around.
What would existence be without boobs?
Just a close-up. The whole film
there
he speaks through his eyes.
So then,
it's amazing how,
come
and we messed up that shot of a clock. The clock doesn't move in that shot. We found out too late to fix it. And this is definitely the most sexual part of the film, where we had to explain how he stayed virgin. It's because the first time she wanted to do it, he thought she was too drunk and he didn't want to take advantage of her. And later, when he wanted to do it, she was just not in the right mind to do it. And he realized that maybe she didn't love him.
Do you think you'll ever love me?
I do.
Sexual incompatibility is a big reason why couples are falling out. This entire segment is our tribute to Wong Kar-wai. We wanted to make a very serious situation, but treat it in a sort of a light-hearted manner.
Did you really say do me?
In a way that there's comedy in this tragedy.
How am I supposed to know where we're going if you don't make love to me?
How am I supposed to make
the
love
song
to
that
you
plays is sung by Manu himself, All That's Beautiful Must Die by his band Narayan. So comprises of Manu Narayan and Radhawan 2 weeks away. That brings us to the end of his story, and we find
absolutely
out who he is.
I'm with three guys on New Year's Eve, and I'm completely happy. And by the way,
the guy you see sleeping throughout the film is Abhishek Shah. He's one of the associate producers of the film. He played a very important role in organizing the logistics for this film, right from
he wasn't
the,
first
the set
guy slept with.
Where
That's
the
different.
Film was shot.
The
car
sequences
to the catering.
Oh my God, that was a horrible
His
breakup.
Wife Yogita
we
was coordinating
years.
The food for
and
all of us.
And that's when I realized
so
that
Abhishek
the most important part of a relationship is not how it's
getting
starts,
everything from costumes to food to locations.
How many boyfriends have you had?
So we had to give him this role.
Okay, I know I sound like a slut, but
in hindsight,
really
I think it may have been interesting if we had a multiracial cast.
Serious
if
relationships.
We actually had
my first one
Americans
was
in,
it was in high school, and we were
other races in the car, so that
really, really
it would
cute.
Be more representative
one, my
of the
world
as opposed to just a bunch of Indians in New York. How coincidental is that?
Okay, I will.
But being
a
low budget film, we had
okay.
to work with our limitations and
don't do it for anybody
resources.
Else but yourself. It's really
as you can see, the characters have started facing each other now.
Human beings
act.
Just concocted to find security.
And you will also notice how they get closer and closer, yeah. and this whole
you know,
thing builds
less,
up
like it's the most
to a kiss
thing.
Across
and
the partition.
Jump up with the, argument that
the reason why
a child loves his mother before he even knows her. But that's not true. Because a child wouldn't have love gushing out of its veins if it saw its mother.
And this was the line that won Shilpa her co-writer credit.
And
the first time
like
I asked Shilpa to help me
hypocritical.
Write
the
script
I mean, think about
was
all the cities
when
that have been destroyed,
I just wanted
all the
a female
lives
perspective
that are ruined,
on things.
All the strings that are paid, or something as undefinable
like
as a feeling.
A
which is
so
relative, at best.
She got on board, and then
and
the way she started
love,
writing
it's supposed
it,
to be incomparable.
Her
throws out the test
contribution
too.
Was just phenomenal.
I mean, I used to believe in
some
love.
Of the most emotional it's lines in the film, including this one, are by her.
Yeah.
Having said that, I must clarify that it does not mean I wrote all the guys' lines and she wrote all the girls' lines. We, in fact, rewrote each other's lines quite a bit. So there's a little bit of Shilpa and Sudhish in Turiya, there's a little bit of Shilpa and Sudhish in Moira as well. Maybe I should talk a little bit more about the writing process itself. The film started off because my friend Krishna, who's also the cinematographer of this film, bought a camera which I'd asked him to buy.
Calm the world with a product that doesn't exist.
So he spent about 6 to 8 months with a camera, and he said, now that I bought the camera, let's go make a film. And I told him that, you know, we can't just make a film with just a camera and no money unless it's two people talking on the phone or three people in the room. And since three people in the room had already been done, so we thought let's do two people on the phone. So it started off as a joke, but the more we thought about it, the more excited we got with the idea, especially with films like Before Sunrise, Before Sunset. And like I said, Cameron Crowe has been a huge influence, and I've always wanted to write that scene from Elizabethtown, the 8-minute phone call
I mean,
which is cut to a musical montage. So I wanted to write that phone call between Drew and Claire Colburn, played by Kirsten Dunst.
Exactly, and you can just believe.
And this is another deleted scene from the film, which we put back because we thought there was some magic to this scene with them singing a song together. It was important for them to forge a memory like this, where they sang a song together, because it means a lot. It's like your phone call just became a musical because of that. It's one of those crazy nights where you actually sang to each other. So we put the scene back into the film, though we still do not have rights to the song, which is also the reason why we made them sing it, and we've kind of muffled it on the radio, hoping that we can still pass this off as fair use. Manu is a fantastic singer. He was the lead of A.R. Rahman and Andrew Lloyd Webber's musical Bombay Dreams when it played in New York for 9 months. So for 9 months, he would go up on stage and perform for 24 songs. He would sing and dance to them. So you can imagine what a powerhouse of talent Manu Narayan is. I later saw him in The Love Guru with Mike Myers. He sings in that one too. My friend, who's also the co-producer of this film, Morgan Subramaniam, had seen Manu in Bombay Dreams and said that if you get Manu, just go for it. He's awesome. It's a choice you will not regret. When I was looking out for an actor like Carl Penn, a common friend, Kaveri Valiappan, told me that she could pass the script on to Manu Narayan, and we thought, let's see if he's interested. If he's interested, we could ask him if he would consider doing this independent film for free. And lucky for us, he liked it enough to do it free.
I do. I've been practicing.
Same thing happened with Seema. I got in touch with her through Facebook. And initially, she refused to give me her phone number. She said, you send the script. If I like it, I will call you back. So it was one of those, you don't call, we'll call kind of things. So I was hoping she would like it. And within the next 24 hours, she did call, and she did say that she was quite shaken up after reading it, because she could see a lot of her in Moira. She didn't even bother discussing money. She was in instantly. The minute she read the script, she knew she had to do it. And I was lucky to find actors who connected to the script that much. And she was really involved. She would call me every day.
I would have gotten you to first base.
This is a scene which was fun to do, because we had this shot of the guys popping up all of a sudden. It was a fairly simple camera trick, which you will see, I think, sometime now. Yeah. And also, Abhishek gets to deliver his only line in the film.
Ask your friends to look outside the window.
And yes, that was improv. It wasn't scripted. In fact, he did that improv at least half a dozen times in the car. And this is the only time we retained it.
You realize you suck at this.
No, he didn't come up with different lines. Every time he would just wake up and say boobs. And it didn't sound funny in any other place, but this is one place where we thought it kind of worked, and we just kept
it. Kiss you, ass.
And this is one of the most honest parts of the film, I think.
I feel stupid kissing a phone.
Because these are things which very few guys would admit.
Just a phone
the fact
thing,
that
would you
they would feel strongly enough to cry if
my good
a girl as awesome as Moira were to
kiss
him. Kiss
a guy like me?
What's wrong with a guy like you?
I like this, the way we shot this
probably
scene
cried.
With the split screen, the partition.
Cried.
This is where the film really comes together, the most intimate part of the film. And we bring back Hussein, the voice of reason, to provide the balance, the reality check for this whole situation that's going on. But at this point, Thuria has managed to break down the cynical Moira, and we realize that She's not the cynical bitch
that she says
she is. There is a softer side.
You gotta go, you gotta go.
She's obviously quite touched by what he said. That she does not know how to react.
Oh, it's 5 minutes to six.
And this is also the time we start the time bomb ticking. The fact we bring in the reminders that it's time for her flight to go, and any minute now that the phone would go dead. So it's all set for a climax. But this is just the beginning of something, and we don't even know how they feel about each other. Not yet. And then there's this looming threat of the battery dying. Which is bound to happen on New Year's night, especially when you've been texting everyone, you've been getting endless calls, and it's in the middle of the night.
My phone died again.
You're mobile and you're on the move.
Don't look at
your battery is almost drained out with all the signal, roaming signal.
Come on, give it to me, please.
And obviously,
so much
now Surya, who's borrowed everybody's phone, finally resorts to convincing Hussein. This is also convincing the rational part of him to do the right thing. In many ways, Hussein, JC, and Sleeping Guy are manifestations of the same person. In one of the early drafts, we showed that when he gets out of the car, there is nobody else. He's just one person getting out of the car,
like a little girl,
right at the end. But then we thought it's just too abstract for people to get that. So we thought we're better off keeping these four guys. It's just really four different guys and not make him out to be some sort of a schizophrenic.
Hey, truth or dare?
Okay.
And as you can see, the close-ups have got extreme close at this point, because now we're all getting into the sentimental part of the film, where we had to feel their pain and loss of losing this wonderful, absolutely magical night that they shared together. So there's a lot which the eyes communicate than what they're telling each other. I felt it was absolutely necessary for me to go for a shot which is as close as this. I'm glad Manu didn't complain at any point that I was just going closer and closer to his face. And Seema, she's just absolutely convincing in this complete
that would make this that
change in personality from the cynic to the soft romantic that she actually is deep inside.
Extremely irrelevant, but
Seema also employs her eyes to great effect here. You can see that they're a little watery. And no glycerine was used by either of my actors. They were really into that moment. I still get quite emotional when I see these scenes. I think they've done a fantastic job. I wouldn't like to take any credit for these scenes because they're completely an actor's showcase. But I do like the way we frame this shot. This is one of those one of my rare contributions to framing, when I said that I wanted it to be a very, very, very slow zoom in. In a way that the audience does not realize that the camera is being zoomed in at this point. I wanted to do it very, 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 very slowly. I'm glad that the cinematographer indulged me with this, this shot.
Life's a bitch, right?
We lost a key portion of the dialogue during the sound mix when the sound editor, the sound mixer, actually accidentally deleted one small bit of dialogue where she says people change, all it takes is a moment for them to start doing something, all it takes is a moment for them to stop.
This is even real or
so we lost people change, so right now it is all it takes is a moment for them to start,
all a dream,
and so on.
Beautiful.
So with this, they are in the final stage of romance, the killing confusion, where you don't know what to do with it. It's great. You have a great friendship and you don't want to lose it because you you've already broken up, you've patched up, you've confided.
I sound tickle.
And now what do you do? So
it's
always tricky when you get to that point
now
from which
with another one.
Anything could happen.
Are you?
You could lose
I'm not
everything
pleading,
or gain everything. The stakes have really gone up at this point.
It felt like the world's coolest.
And it's also important for the characters to reveal who they've become because of this phone call. And this is when we realize that she is not as stone-hearted as she pretended to be. And he is not as soft as he thought he was. He's a stronger man than he knew himself to be. With the kind of things that he's saying, he's not asking her to stay back.
Call me from the landline.
He knows that that would make him weak.
Why?
So,
no, my phone's gonna die in any moment.
She knows that if he asked him to stay back, she would definitely do that because she is a very soft-hearted romantic at heart, even
Hello,
now.
Hello, may I speak with Mr. Turiya Om Prakash?
Wow, you.
And that's the last thing
name.
He asks him to do. He asks him to call from a landline, and we realize that she still remembers his surname. She's got a great memory, this Moira, as we've seen throughout the film. She remembered JC, Hussein, not JC, she knew that the guy who said his name didn't matter, and she remembered Hussein. So obviously this is a girl who's got a very, very sharp memory, who remembers every bit of this night. And that's a hint for us to suggest, that's a hint that tells us that maybe she's not going to forget this whole night. In an instance, in a heartbeat,
just flush
she's
it
definitely
going to
miss him as much as he
why?
Might miss her.
Because.
What if I want to call you again?
Now,
that's why.
Initially, this was one of the endings that we thought of. We thought of ending the film at this point after she flushes down the SIM card and on his request, of course. And then she says goodnight. No, he says goodnight and she says good morning. Cut to black. Film ends. That's how we had planned it, but then we thought it was a little too brutal for that to happen. You're going to see that scene play out in a moment. And I resume commentary after that.
Thank you for doing that. I know you did that for me.
What?
Help me clear my mind space.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess this is it.
Yep.
Goodbye.
No, don't ever say goodbye. Good night.
Morning.
Yeah, instead of that, it was going to be just black. We are not staying with them. We don't see what happens to them after that. The film was supposed to end right there. But I'm glad I didn't do it that way. That would have been a little too cruel, a little too brutal. And again, we had to make him... This is not a scene that warrants tears, but
guy.
You still get a little teary-eyed by the thought of missing that one person you share this incredibly amazing night. These nights happen once in a lifetime. I'm not too sure how many people would relate to this, and I hope people who don't relate to it experience a night like this so that you know that something like this could bring you to tears. And we see that Turiya has sent her the waffle. When did he do this? When did he order the waffle? He did it at the halfway point when JC was feeding the fish. We see there's a shot of Turiya trying to talk to someone over the phone. That's probably our guess is that that's the time he ordered the waffle to sort of make up for saying something nasty to her. Even if unwittingly. He surely offended her, he didn't know what he said that offended her, so he probably just sent her waffle. And that's a song which Manu did again with his band Darunam. It it's meant to be an old-fashioned song, Thief of My Heart, and equally cheesy lines, so if you thought this was cheesy, you're absolutely right. It is intended to be cheesy because the film is sort of a bridge between modern-day technology of today and the old-world romance when people did not hesitate to use language like this.
Do her, man.
When people were more expressive about love.
Okay.
And we also realize that the ring that wasn't coming off her finger has finally come off all by itself, without her even having to make the effort for it. And we give her a moment to soak in everything that happened that night. She thinks about it for a moment. A lot of people think the film should have ended at this point.
Single and alone on
things about it. But I think a lot of people in the audience would have cheated if we hadn't told them how they actually met earlier that night. That's Raja delivering his most crucial scene in the film. He was very, very nervous about it. And we had to shoot the scene in India. We couldn't shoot it in the bar in the US. So we had to get a lot of extras, international extras, for this shoot. And the song that's playing in the background, the cover version of Strangers in the Night, is actually performed live by Sudeep, who happens to be in the frame at this moment. There's just a glimpse, brief glimpse of Sudeep who's standing behind. A cameo. And that's how he knew her room number. That's how he got her phone number. He knew which hotel she was staying in. He knew her room number, so it's not too difficult to give her a call. One of the things we did when we went to New York was we rented out a helicopter to get that footage of the New York skyline. We wanted to capture the landscape, the distance between the two people. There was no way we would have gone back without that shot. We had to show how far they were from each other. So we actually rented out a helicopter from Trenton, which is halfway between New York and Philadelphia. And we shot the aerial shots of the landscape, the snow-clad landscape of that season. And she sums up the eight stages of romance. And we know it's time for her to catch the flight. And what does she do? How real it was. Her whole life flashes past her at this moment. Maybe there's a reason she survived the drowning when she tried to kill herself. Life has a way of surprising us, so we don't have the answers. There is no one truth. She was somebody before the phone call, and she's become somebody else. Same with him. So the only truth is that there is no truth. And your perception of truth depends on whose perspective you see it from. Hussein's, or JC's, or the guy sleeping in the car, or Turiya at the end of the film. That's the landscape, the distance that they've gone far away from each other. I like the mood that we managed to create with this. It's one of my most favorite parts of the film, something that I'm still very proud of. And here it is, the ending. The shot of the lights at the tunnel, that's how the film began. And the film's come a full circle. Her life's come a full cycle. Good night, good morning. We arrived at this end purely by accident, and I'm glad we arrived at this ending on the editing table, because the ending we had written was fairly more conventional. It's something you can check out in the special features of this DVD. It's there under alternate ending. The reason we didn't use it was because we were not happy with how we executed the ending. But the reason why we wrote it in the first place was because this is a film about pop culture. It explores the connection between life and pop culture, how close-knit both have become. And it was necessary for this story to have a pop culture ending, or a popular sort of an ending, which would tie up every bit of the episodes that we saw in the course of this film. What happens if Geeky had met a girl like Anjali? Or what happened if Sassy had met Rahul? So, for things to work out, people's intentions in each other need to be equal, the efforts need to be equal. And that's what we were trying to say. And I think the alternative ending actually provides that with much more clarity than this sort of artistic ending, which is more true to the title of the film, of course. But it's always interesting to look back at the other option that we had. And I think there is truth in both the endings. The initial plan was to slap that ending, the alternate ending, at the end, right at the end of the end credits. But we realized nobody's going to stay till the end of the end credits, unless it's a DVD commentary that you're listening to. So yes, that's a list of the music that we used. Thank you once again, Ray Guntrap, for just giving us permission over an email. Thank you, Gregory. Thank you, Roger McNaughton, who we paid for to acquire the rights for Silent Night. Thank you, Manu. And the last song that's playing over the end credits is royalty-free because it was composed long, long, long ago. So yeah, this was a film which we shot with a Sony HVR VivoNew on New Year's night. At least all the outdoors were shot in New York and the indoors were shot in Chennai. Thank you so much for buying an original DVD and listening to me all this time. Thank you.